The Ghost Goal Podcast.
I told you guys, Liverpool weren't serious title contenders, and we're down to two. Arsenal and Manchester City both keep getting wins. It's probably going to go down to the last day. We've got a few other storylines developing in the Premier League. Sheffield is now officially relegated. Everton is officially safe with their win at the weekend. And there is still a battle for top four and fifth and sixth place. So lots still to look for in these last 3 to 4 Premier League games. Welcome to the Ghost Goal Podcast. This is episode 450. You're hearing me, Javier, doing the intro this time, switching it up a little bit. Just for funsies here.
Tamer than I expected. I expected all sorts of expletives and
that's Alex's rants voice you're
about
hearing.
Arsenal being the kings of London. Yes, it is.
Well,
welcome.
Alex, how are you doing? How are you doing? What's you know, your Blues looked pretty good this weekend. It came back, like I said. You know, they'd look decent at the weekend, and back Cole Palmer back in the team. Were you?
We thought we were dead and buried at 2-0, and for us, I think I said at halftime to my brother, I'd bite your hand off for a 2-2 draw, and ended up disappointed anyway when we had a late winner overturned by VAR. But it did end 2-2, so I can't be too upset, especially after that thrashing we took to Arsenal last week.
Do you think
week.
You have any chance of getting that?
No.
You know, sixth place?
No. We've got a big game with Spurs coming up this week, which we'll talk about a little bit later in the pod. But if we win that, maybe. But I mean, I expect nothing from this Chelsea team, and will be try to keep myself from being disappointed yet again. Because if you expect nothing, you can't be disappointed.
Well, Manchester United, I mean, yeah, they've been terrible, dropping points. They've only gotten one win in their last five, Alex. I think if you guys are somehow pull off a win against Tottenham, and maybe you could believe that you'll push for that final, you know, European Conference League spot, that would put some sort of, like,
even if we got that spot,
small,
we're not.
Yeah, that would
put, I don't think we'd be. I don't think we'd be eligible financially to compete in the Conference League. I think our payroll is too high to compete in that competition.
So maybe you don't even care about finishing sixth place.
Like, Europa League would have been barely enough, and I think the only way we would have realistically gotten that is winning the FA Cup, which we're obviously out of. So another season of no Europe for Chelsea. I was ready for that for most of this season. So again. Can't be disappointed if you don't expect anything. But I mean, we can't start with Chelsea and Aston Villa. You know, we're going to start with the title race, because Arsenal have held up their end of the bargain, as you mentioned. They're, you know, the only
did,
team
Alex.
Really challenging City
season.
Now. Well, I mean, two biggest games. Since we last recorded, you guys beat us 5-0 in a absolutely ludicrous display. From the Blues at the Emirates last week, and then went up 3-0 against Tottenham and scraped a 3-2 win. Tell me the levels of shitting your pantsness that you reached watching those last few minutes at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium on Sunday.
You know, it did feel like it was coming again, just because of the way that the game had gone. I mean, it was a great North London derby. I'll say, you know, I think Arsenal, sometimes the decisions that happened in the first half, you know, I think sometimes they haven't gone our way. And this was one of those times where we had a little bit of luck and decisions went our way, especially with Arsenal's second goal, where, you know, I don't think that Trossard had any intention at all of clipping, I think it was Madison in the box. But I don't think that was a penalty, but, you know, Spurs fan obviously think that it was, and we scored off of that counterattack. You know,
it still hasn't happened yet where a penalty at one end resulted in a goal at the other end, but like they overturn the goal and award the penalty to the other team. I thought that was going to be it, but it's one of those ones where if the referee gave it as a penalty on the field, then VAR wouldn't overturn it. But since it wasn't given, there wasn't
by like sometimes those decisions would have gone against us. That time it didn't. Same thing with the offside, with, you know, when Spurs went up 1-0, you know, it was by, you know,
they equalized.
Talking about Gabriel's butt. And it was like,
it would have been
right,
an equalizer.
Man,
like, you know, guys were up 1-0 already.
Yeah. Right, right. Their equalizer, yeah. But, you know, I was a little disappointed that we didn't try to go for like a fourth one. I mean, we did get several chances in the second half to really kill the game off. But I mean, this was always going to be a game where we were going to suffer. You know, I'm not happy with the manner that it happened, but it does seem like the vast majority of our goals this season have come from errors like that. And every team has them. You know, I'm not like, you know, I think we just saw today, Ter Stegen had a horrific error for Barcelona. Yeah. You know, he's one of the best goalies in the world. So, you know, what Raya did was probably his worst gaffe of the season, but I think he was fantastic the rest of the game. You know, I think he was still, there were crosses and shots to deal with, and he was great after making a terrible mistake. So I think that's the type of mentality that I've seen like instilled into this Arsenal team, is that even if we do go and make a mistake, we don't necessarily do what happened with teams of old, which is go and just collapse.
Well, I thought it was a pretty good sign. It's always a good sign when your team is so deprived of possession. Maybe that was by design for Arsenal in the first half. What was it?
That was like, 100% by design.
Like 25% possession by Arsenal, but up 3-0.
I was going to tell you, we just sat off Tottenham.
And,
right,
and
we just sat off Tottenham. We didn't really press them. We sat in a mid block and caught them offside a bunch of times. And it's something that, you know, when I talk about a mid block, it's basically, you know, you're not sitting back completely in your box. You're sitting up, you know, you set up your team just a little bit outside the box, but still very deep. You know, we weren't pressing high up the field. We were letting Tottenham have the ball and kind of come at us. And it's something that you could only do if you have a very, very good defensive team, which Arsenal are one of the best in Europe right now. And I think we were able to show it in this. You know, we went up 3-0 and Tottenham didn't have a sniff. I mean, there was no point in the game when we were in the second half where I thought, oh, Tottenham are going to get back in this, until Raya did what he did. So I think if Raya hadn't done that, we would have won the game 3-0. Maybe 3-1.
Possibly,
maybe,
yeah.
They would have got a goal at the end. But I really do think that that's how dominant defensively we were. Now, I'm not saying Spurs didn't deserve to, you know, get back in the game or almost at the end probably draw it. Like, you know, I know that they'll feel hard done by. But I think, like, our game plan worked. We went into this game thinking we're going to get a few goals, shut up shop, and win that way. And that's what happened. So, you know, I give props to Arteta for being able to execute different plans, not always having to be the high-pressing team, not always having to be the team with possession. But going into games, huge games like this, same thing with the Manchester City game at the Etihad. You know, we sat in a mid-block type thing and played very defensively, and were able to play against the counterattack, and we ended up having the best chances at the Etihad. So again, you know, I have to praise Bukayo Saka though in this game, because he'd been off it for about a month or so, and I've been saying he'd been looking tired, and he got beat up again in this game, but he was brilliant. You know, goal and assist in this one. Kai Havertz,
the touch again by Saka on the, like, to bring down the Havertz ball,
yeah,
when he ran in behind, but was beautiful.
Havertz was brilliant again in that. I mean, that he had the assist for Saka, like a 40-yard pass out the field. It's not easy to do that under pressure.
I'm just praising the touch by Saka. That's...
Yeah, and the touch by Saka was what made the goal, obviously, in the finish. But Kai Havertz's finish is also phenomenal as well. You know, off a corner, he offers you a bunch of physicality. And he was a big outlet for us during that game. There was a bunch of times that Raya had to just boot the ball up the field. Kai would bring it down, hold it up, lay it off to Trossard or Saka, and relieve pressure that way. And he won, I think, 7 or 8 aerial duels in that game. I mean, he was just... It's obviously, he offers us something different. And I really appreciate what he's doing right now in the Arsenal team. I think he has, since he started at center forward, he's now had 9 games, and he has 9 goals and 6 assists in 9 starts at center forward. So Kai Havertz is on the best form of his life in the Premier League. He's never had any type of form like this for Chelsea. You know, Chelsea fans would talk about the purple patch. It's now been 5 months, actually, of Kai Havertz being... No, like, purple patch. It's been 5 months of him being very, very good. So
you're saying he's been this good since December?
Since the Newcastle game.
The Newcastle game that you lost.
Yes.
I don't know about that. I think last
I think that was the turning
months.
Point for him.
I'll give you 3 months.
I think that was the huge turning point for him. I don't think he's, that's not when he started scoring goals for us, but that's when he, when I meant like mentality wise, I went, this guy's here to fight. This guy wants to be here, wants to improve. And like in that Newcastle game, he was a huge nuisance to Newcastle and, you know, probably should have gotten sent off, but I mean, caused so much havoc and chaos in that game that, you know, it really proved to me like this guy, there's more than just, you know, this flimsy diver, you know, who seems to be, who missed a bunch of chances to start the season.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see this summer what Arsenal do, because a lot of the sort of neutrals input about how this Arsenal team can improve is by you guys signing like a classic number nine focal point center forward. And if that happens, what happens to Kai Havertz? Where does he fit in the team from that point? Or is it more of a rotational kind of thing? But it's a good option to know that you have
someone
like him.
Well, but you saw
like
in this
him.
Game, I mean, it was great. He was dropping deep all the time, dropping
yeah,
into
yeah,
midfield.
It's not
he
a criticism.
Drop into a low
it's
block.
Not a criticism of Kai Havertz. It's literally just saying if you guys sign
right.
like Ivan Toney or
I don't,
you know,
I don't
break
know,
the bank
I don't
for
know if,
Osimhen.
I don't know if, I was about to say, I don't know if right now, like the way that we're playing and the versatility that we have with someone like Kai, I don't know if now Arteta's going to go and try to sign a striker who needs to, who can sit at the top of the, you know, and not press and do things like, I don't know if we need an Erling Haaland. Obviously, if we had Haaland, it would be amazing, but.
What about Victor Osimhen?
Could be. It could be.
Yeah, you would take him. Absolutely.
I would take him.
Yeah, the guy presses like a madman and he scores bags of goals. So, yeah, if that happens, we might see the reemergence of Kai Havertz tried out in midfield again. You never know. But like I said, it's a good option for you guys to have. Before we move on from this, I did just want to mention that I think this game is going to be looked back on a lot in terms of Tottenham's outlook because of how much emphasis you guys put on bullying Vicario off set pieces. I mean, the two goals obviously stand out, but
I mean, Ben White,
outside
of
that,
I've been talking about
it.
It
was incessant how often like players were, you know, just trying to physically dominate Vicario before the ball was even played, and how the placement, especially of the third goal, the second set piece goal, Havertz's goal, how the ball placement was just put like right on Vicario's chest, like right at him with a bunch of power, telling him, all right, come out and use your hands and be physical. And he failed those tests. And so did the Tottenham defense. It's not just on Vicario, but I wouldn't be surprised if you see more of that from other teams, basically pointing that out, like, oh, look what Arsenal managed to get against them. We can do the same thing. We can at the
By
very
the way,
least
and
cause chaos.
And do you remember, Alex, when we were talking about the buildup to this game, we were saying, okay, Arsenal just played 4 games in 12 days. During that time, Tottenham didn't play any games. They had 15 days of rest while we played 4 games. So, of course, Tottenham were going to have a better second half and come into the game and always have a second wind. I feel like we did really well to manage that even after they got those two goals and there was 25 minutes left to play in the game.
I'm sure, yeah, you know, I'm sure so Arteta probably acknowledged, like, we're going to be a little bit more
really,
tired.
Really well.
We're going to have to manage our own fitness and, you know, try and take advantage in spots like that on set pieces. And
now we have 6 days before the next game. Then we have 9 days before the game after that at Old Trafford, and then 7 days before the final game. I think we're going to win those 3 games. I mean, we're going to have fully rested team. I don't think it's going to be enough. I think City are going to win their last 4 and they're going to win the title. But I do think that the whole narrative of us choking, that didn't happen this season. Like, I think we built into our team this year.
There's still games
we came into
left,
form
Javier.
In the season. Yeah, again, if we don't win those last 3 games, you can say that. But I think we're going to win these last 3 games.
I don't think you
pretty
are.
Comfortably.
I don't think you
right.
are.
You've been saying that.
I stand by it. Yeah, I'm still not worried about that prediction. But the important thing is that City win the league. So the ultimate prediction of you guys not winning the league comes true. So, speaking of which, City went to Nottingham Forest, to the City ground, and beat them 2-0. Similarly to Arsenal
so
over Tottenham,
lucky,
took
dude.
Advantage.
So
oh,
lucky.
Okay, so them getting a set-piece goal is lucky, and you guys getting two is not lucky.
No,
okay, great.
No. Nottingham Forest missing like 5 clear-cut
yeah,
chances.
They're a relegation,
the woodwork
they're a relegation
twice.
Team. What do you expect?
Just,
they're going to miss
was,
chances.
And City just weren't that good. Like, it was...
City managed the game perfectly. They kept possession. Haaland was resting because he's going back from an injury. They
Forest had like
4
or 5 good chances in the first half, man.
Yeah, no, I know.
That's not managing the game well. And City had one chance and they scored it. I mean, that is like Manchester City in a nutshell.
You can chalk it up to luck, but City have been doing this for years now. Like they know how to see out a game. They know how to, you know, take the energy out of an away stadium.
I did say I thought
that
the Forest game would be much bigger, bigger test than Brighton for Manchester City, and that ended up being the case. You know, Forest really, really took it to them. And for all of that game, basically, I mean, Nottingham Forest stayed in it. So I give them props. You know, they didn't just get blown away by City here. But it did feel kind of dooming when Haaland came off the bench and scored. Yeah, he's back, and I'm sure they're going to easily win those last four games with him back in the team.
City's last four games. Home Wolves this weekend on Saturday. At Fulham, which is probably the biggest banana skin potentially next to the game after that, which is at Spurs in the midweek, and then home West Ham to finish. That is probably tougher than Arsenal's last couple of games, which is home Bournemouth, at United, home Everton. So two very winnable home games in that, and then one iffy trip to Old Trafford, but
we're going to destroy
that. That could be easy considering that United, you know, it seems like they've downed their tools for this season.
I was about to say, they just drew 1-1 with Burnley at Old Trafford, man. Like, yeah. I'm not taking that United are going to come into this game. They have a one goal differential. They are absolute shit. And I think that we've been raring to go back at this Manchester United team.
I think that's the team. I think that's the game that you draw. That's the game that you draw. I think United.
I think we go up 3-0 like we did at like we did at Tottenham Stadium.
We can probably
and
wait.
We don't concede
to preview that. Yeah. You know, we'll wait until next week.
But
I'm just saying that
there's still plenty of time for it.
While there's more opportunities for City to drop points, obviously they have the game in hand. That's basically their lifeline as well at this point. We've just seen City do this too often. You know, it's whether it's Arsenal last year or Liverpool a couple of years before. When their destiny is in their own hands, they take care of their own destiny. It's just what they do. You saw in that Forest game where you saw things like Haaland on the bench, Foden out, like ill, something like that. Foden's usually been the one who's stepped up in situations like that where Haaland's...
Kevin De Bruyne.
Yeah, and then, you know, just the rest of the team steps up, so that they have the quality and the depth of squad to just keep on chugging along, picking up wins, no matter
And they brought on their £100 million signing in Grealish, the most expensive English player of all time.
Isn't that Declan Rice?
No, Grealish still was more than him.
No, Grealish was $100 million. We're not going to do the arguments about transfer fees.
Grealish is still the most expensive English transfer ever.
The most pointless arguments we've ever gotten into are about haggling over what an exact transfer fee is. But okay, we should mention Liverpool before we do a couple of previews for this week. Like you said in the intro, they're officially out of the title race. Arguably, they were before. But their draw with West Ham over the weekend pretty much solidified it, though they're still going to get top four.
I just want to talk about the Salah spat on the sideline.
Sure, yeah.
I don't care about the game. Because that signified the end of the era right there. Because it's like, if you're going to be disrespectful to Jurgen Klopp, you know, in his last few games for Liverpool, when he's done so much for you guys over the years. I mean, to me, it left a really sour taste. I dropped Salah that minute. Well, I'd already dropped him the week before, but I checked my fantasy again to make sure he wasn't on my team. But no, I was surprised that that something like that happened in the game. And, you know, I'm sure Salah, being a professional, thought he needed to be on the pitch earlier. But, you know, you don't go and refuse a hug and a handshake from your manager that always does the same routine with all his players, you know. And I thought it was so petty and really just kind of shows maybe that this Liverpool team is... I know they have a lot of really good young players and players they brought in this year, and they have a great core that they're going to rely on for this next coach. I think you just get rid of Salah now. I know that they went and said, like, oh, we have Salah in our plans for next season. He performed phenomenally for 3/4 of the season and then ran out of steam at the end, and Liverpool weren't able to win the title because of that, or stay in the title race because of that. And I think that he's the type of player now that you sell him while he's hot. You know, $100 million for him, get him out the door.
Well, selling him while he's hot would have been selling him last year to when the Saudi bid came in, but... I don't think that bid's going to be there this time around. So it may be a little bit tougher to sell him this summer. But I thought that that spat on the sideline had sort of like the underlying issues inflamed by overall just a misunderstanding. Like, it seemed like, especially with all the fallout since then, I didn't know this in the moment, but the couple of days or the day or two since that happened, it's come out that, and you've seen like the alternate angles of how it started. Basically, Klopp like went to Salah and was annoyed that Salah wasn't like ready to go on as quickly as possible. And when Klopp went up to Salah to get a handshake and a hug, like before he went on, Salah was down fixing something with his boot or with his sock or something and didn't see it. And then Klopp like blew it up into this whole thing, like this bigger thing than it actually had to be. And then the final nail in the coffin that sort of like ensured that everyone will be talking about it until whenever Liverpool play their next game is, as Salah was leaving the stadium afterwards, the journalists were calling after him to ask questions, and he just said, he did the Mourinho, like, if I speak, there will be flames, or some, I can't remember the exact quote, but, and
he said, there will be fire.
There'll be fire, that's it, yeah. And that, I think, has more to do with Salah being pissed off about being benched for that game. I understand that, but knowing what happened with the spat that everyone saw, Salah should have just kept his mouth shut there. You know, he's just basically pouring oil on an already lit flame. So, yeah. And then obviously him not coming on and like winning the game for them. If he had done that, then no one's talking about it. Everyone's like, oh yeah, you know, we're competitors. We're gonna be on edge, but that's what makes us so great. So it's all kind of been like over. It's kind of been blown up into something bigger than it actually is. And you know, It's not gonna lead to like Liverpool thinking, oh, we have to sell Salah, because they're already
that
is, loose.
That was kind of wild though for Klopp to put Salah on in the 81st minute. Come on, you got to bring that guy on in like the 60th minute, right?
No, like you said, he's not been very good. So I'm gonna give the players that are on the field a little bit more time than usual to try and, you know, get a positive result. But it all just seems like it's kind of petering out for Jurgen Klopp. You know, they obviously got the Carabao Cup. That's a nice.
I was gonna say,
start.
I feel like the announcement that he was leaving, It galvanized them for a while. They had that mentality of, no matter what, we're going to win these games. But we knew it was going to catch up with them. You couldn't keep going behind in games. You couldn't keep conceding. You know,
it's just so funny how like they were winning all those games after the news while going through a bunch of very big injuries. Like Trent Alexander-Arnold was out for a couple of months, where Connor Bradley was starting pretty much every game at right
back.
And
now that they have
well.
Their full team,
right,
they're pretty much
the whole team's
the
back. They're terrible. Like they could barely create anything consistently. It's mind-boggling to watch, but that's how it goes sometimes. All right, well, let's preview a couple games. Most pressingly, and it'll probably have started by the time you guys listen to this one, tomorrow, the Champions League semifinals. No English teams involved, but Tuesday and Wednesday, we'll see Bayern Munich host Real Madrid on Tuesday and Dortmund host PSG on Wednesday, with the reverse fixtures happening next week. Let's just get on record right now. Who do we have winning those two games, or those two ties going through to the Champions League final? I have a sneaking suspicion we're going to have the same picks here, but I'm going to go Real Madrid beating Bayern Munich and PSG beating Dortmund. Any different from you?
I want to be devil's advocate here, Alex. I think Bayern Munich beat Real Madrid.
Ah, yes, just to prove to everyone that you guys lost to a really, really good team, right?
No. I think it's because
Bayern Munich are not beating Real Madrid, man. Like,
probably not.
Real have
probably
the second not. Leg at home. Even if Bayern win that first leg, they got to go back to they got to go back to the Bernabeu. It's Jude Bellingham, he's on his,
I think it's going to be a really
Ballon
close
d'Or,
tie.
Like March right
no,
now.
No, I know, Alex, but I think it's going to be a really close tie. I don't think it's going to be like, you know, Real Madrid just blow away Bayern.
Yeah, no, I didn't say that. I just said I have Real Madrid going through. And I'm pretty confident
about
that.
I'm going to say Bayern Munich upset Real Madrid because of Tuchel, and I'm going to say PSG go through as well.
Well, with that, you pretty much confirmed that Dortmund are going through, because every time you pick against Dortmund, they seem to upset you. So
yeah, you're right, Alex. Every time
a Derclassiker Champions League
right,
final,
and then if they get to the final, I have to just pick whatever other team against them, and then they'll win the final.
Dortmund fans, hit this guy's Venmo right now. What makes you think Bayern Munich are going to go through against Real Madrid? I know you are fresh off seeing them beat your Arsenal in the quarterfinals. Like, what exactly is it that has you thinking they'll beat Real Madrid?
I mean, I just think that their front four is better than Real Madrid's. And I think that defensively they're pretty similar in terms of not having very good defenses. And I think in midfield, I think it's going to be a slight advantage to Real Madrid in midfield. But I think the attacking front four of Bayern Munich is better. So, and I think they're going to score more goals in the two legs than Real Madrid. I think both of the games are going to be shootouts. And I'm going to say, I also just like Manuel Neuer right now. I like the way that this this Bayern team only has to focus on the Champions League. And I mean, already seen Tuchel do it. I know we've already seen Ancelotti do it.
Real basically wrapped up La Liga.
Right. So, yeah. I mean,
it's Real's midfield that puts them over the top for me. They're obviously
favorites. But I was really surprised with Laimer and Goretzka at how good they were. And I think you'll be surprised as well when they play against Real Madrid how good the Laimer, Goretzka, Musiala midfield with a front three of,
and then Kimmich,
you know,
stepping in.
Gnabry. Yeah, Kimmich was just unreal again, both legs. And I think he'll be one of the best players in the tie. You know, I think you'll see Kimmich dominate in midfield and defensively at times. And I mean, it's going to be a great tie. I think people are underestimating Bayern Munich because they got blown out so much in the Bundesliga. But this is not a bad Bayern Munich side. Leroy Sané, you know, if he's back fit, which he's had some time to get back. Yeah, he's very, very dangerous in these competitions where there's a lot of space. Him, Gnabry, Koeman, and Harry Kane. He's the best striker in Europe still right now, I think. So at least the most consistent. And he'll definitely get some goals against this Real Madrid team.
Yeah, I don't want to disrespect Bayern Munich. Like, I do think that midfield is quite good and has performed well these last couple of weeks, specifically in the Champions League. But when you factor in like the mix of experience in Modric and Kroos that Real Madrid have, along with players like Camavinga, Valverde, Bellingham, who's almost not a midfielder at this point, he's basically a false nine for them, and then Aurelien Tchouameni being willing and able to drop back into the defensive line and be a makeshift center back while they're Madrid are dealing with injuries, it's a lethal mix. That's
what I think. I mean, Real Madrid have some injuries at the back. I feel like they have a weakness at right back. You know, they've been playing Vasquez and an old Carvajal. You know, I think that this Real Madrid team needs some signings in the back line in the summer. I think they're probably going to go for a keeper. I don't know if they're going to keep Lunin. But again, I just think that there's enough weaknesses in this Real Madrid back line that Bayern Munich will find them.
They'll get Courtois back.
I mean, Bayern Munich, I think, have a better chance than we would have had against Real Madrid. So, I don't know.
I can definitely say that. And then for quickly on the PSG Dortmund fixtures.
Like, they're not going to be nervous like we would have been in this game, right? That's what I mean.
Right.
In these games.
But quickly on the PSG Dortmund fixture, these two teams played each other in that group of death that we were talking about earlier in the season, where it was PSG, Dortmund, Newcastle, and AC Milan. PSG won the home leg 2-0 in the first game of the Champions League group stage, and then it was a 1-1 draw between the two when they played in Dortmund. And PSG almost got knocked out. Like, Dortmund had a bunch of chances that if they'd taken them and won the game, it would have been Newcastle progressing ahead of PSG. So Dortmund won't fear PSG either. They've just got to get out to a lead in this first game, this first home game. They've had the second leg in each of the last two rounds at home at Dortmund. It's a very different dynamic when you're playing the home leg first. You've got to make sure a draw is not good enough. Arsenal learned this lesson. You've got to set yourselves up to go away, but back to Parc des Princes with some kind of lead, because you know there'll be a period in that second leg where PSG just take over and dominate, and you have to have a little bit of a wiggle room to make up for that. But yeah, looking forward to those two Champions League ties, and after those are concluded Thursday, we're going to have Chelsea-Tottenham in the Premier League, a game that was postponed from a couple months back, actually, when the Carabao Cup final was played. Chelsea were supposed to play this fixture. We obviously were the first team to beat Tottenham earlier this season when we beat them 4-1, kind of out of the blue. There was, you know, help from Cristiano Romero to get himself sent off. They've lost plenty of games since then. They don't seem like the sort of indestructible force that they did at that time. But Tottenham, importantly, have more to play for in the league this season than Chelsea do. I know you're saying, oh, Chelsea, they can still get up to sixth. But, like, to the players, that, like, what is that? You know, we might get sixth place.
Yeah, Tottenham, no, I do think Tottenham could go and win these next couple of games, Chelsea and Liverpool. I mean, it's not going to be easy. You know, there are two more away games for them. And, you know, Tottenham haven't been great away from home, so I do think they can go and get a result against Chelsea. I think they'll be galvanized here. I do think it'll be goals in it. I'm going to say 3-2 Tottenham.
I'm going to say 2-2. I think this is a Cole Palmer game. We probably get another penalty. Like, I would put money on Cole Palmer to score a penalty at some point in this game. You can't really pick him up for fantasy since the game week's already started, and this is the last game of the game week. But if you haven't captained him in fantasy, this would be one to have him as your fantasy captain for, because he's been great in our home games the last couple of games. Obviously the Everton 4 goals, the hat trick against United right before that. I could honestly see this game going a very similar way to how that Manchester United home game went, the 4-3 that we won right at the death. These are two absolutely insane and ill-disciplined teams that concede goals for fun and choke leads for fun. So,
hey, I could even see Nicholas Jackson returning something.
Yeah, I know you do. But if you didn't learn from Villa over the weekend or Arsenal the week before that, Javier, then you're never going to learn. Just take the L on that pick. Take the L.
All right. The number one player in fantasy, the guy leading fantasy right now, has Nicholas Jackson in his team. Shut your mouth.
Purely for differential reasons.
Know your place.
He overthought it just like you did. But you know what? You guys will learn. Don't ever trust Nicholas Jackson again. Speaking of which, we should go to your fantasy kitchen for this week, Javier. What have you got?
It's an embarrassing fantasy kitchen this week, Alex. I can't believe I've chefed up this type of meal, but it really is just... it's a very one-colored, one-sided kitchen. Not a lot of variation today, so if you don't like the food, I'm very sorry. But for the appetizer, we got Julian Alvarez. He's back, Alex. He's played the last four games.
It's Julian. Julian Alvarez.
Julian Alvarez.
Yeah.
He's back. He's played the last four games for Manchester
shit.
City. I like my gringo shit sometimes. Though. Come on. All right. Alvarez has played, you know, he started the last five games in a row here. He's played 90 minutes in four out of five of those games, so he's not coming off. He's gotten a goal and an assist in them, so it's not like he's been producing amazing numbers, but he missed a bunch of chances in that 4-1 win against Villa. He could have gotten himself a hat trick, ended up only with 2 points, but he's really looks like he's kind of getting back on form. His returns have come in the last three games. So I would look to him as one who might get a lot of minutes, because it looks like, you know, earlier in the season when City were really doing well was when Haaland and Alvarez were playing, and Alvarez was kind of dropped back in midfield and doing a lot of the hard work. You know, I know that maybe a lot of that had to do with Foden kind of dropping in and out of the team, but even with Foden in the team, Alvarez has been playing and not coming off the pitch. So he seems to be someone who's crucial again. So look to be bringing him in as if you want a cheap striker, cheap in for City. They have a double game week in 37. That's another reason why you want to load up on City players, because there aren't a lot of teams that have double game weeks left. But it's basically, you know, one of them is Manchester City, another one is Spurs. So those are two teams that you want to look at. Continuing on that theme, he's back, Alex. The robot's back. Erling Haaland, 14.1 mil. I know it's going to be hard to get him in your team, but it does feel like a lot of the premiums who were doing well earlier in the season, you know, namely kind of like Saka. Yeah, you know.
Salah and, is the one.
Salah, exactly. Salah, it's a huge, team, huge one. Yeah, you got a lot of money to move around. So, you know, you can. I think it's time to bring Haaland back in. I think for these last four games, he'll look to wrap up his golden boot. And I'm sure he'll get like a hat trick and a brace or two in these games, and you know he'll end up with 27 or 28 goals for the season and win the Golden Boot. But that's why I would bring him in right now. And also, again, he has a double game week. And finally, for dessert, Alex, Josko Guardiol, another City player, three City players. Surprise, surprise! They're probably going to win the league almost certainly. So you got to think that Guardiol, he's been a huge part of these. Of these last few games for City, just in that Nottingham Forest game, he got a goal. He also had a goal line clearance.
Scored a goal against Luton and against Real Madrid in the Champions League. He's like found his goal scoring touch recently.
Right, and he's become a big part of this team, and he's getting, you know, he's not coming off the pitch either. He's assured one, I think, to start in these last four games for City, along with Haaland and Julian Alvarez. So if you want to load up on City players, I would go. You can't go wrong probably with Foden either, or De Bruyne. Got to think all those guys are going to be getting significant minutes.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And honestly, I find this feeble attempt at a Hail Mary reverse jinx to be laughable. Because you'd rather say, oh, I was wrong with my fantasy advice, sorry, giggle, giggle, than, you know, just say that City are better than you. Even in their worst season in the last, like, 5 years, you're still going to lose the league to them. And this is laughable. So, all right, we'll see how it plays out. Javier, thank you for another fantasy kitchen. If you want to follow,
by the way, I'm only 20 points off the top now, Alex. I might be at the top after this Chelsea game with my Nicholas Jackson and Cole Palmer captain.
We'll see. I hope you're right for that one, actually, specifically, because it would probably mean Chelsea beating Spurs, which I'm always a fan of. Oh, and by the way, I know he doesn't listen to the pod, but shout out to a friend of my younger brother's, Lucas. He's a Spurs fan. He's planning on going to the Chelsea game on Thursday. He's in London right now. In a Spurs top in the Chelsea, not in the away end, basically. And I have warned him. I have told him, you might be murdered. He doesn't seem to care. So I hope the Chelsea fans kill him, is what I'm trying to say. And I will attend his funeral in a blue
suit. You're
going
to feel really bad if he actually dies.
Well, yeah. I warned him. So no, I won't feel bad. If he does it, it's on him. You know, he's a big boy. All right, that does it. Javier, if you want to follow Javier, you can do so on Twitter, at JavierRev9. You can follow me, Alex, on Twitter and Instagram, at ASMoss92. And finally, you can follow the podcast socials, at GhostGoPod. Enjoy the Champions League semifinals this week, and the Premier League coming close to a close next weekend. And until next time, see you.